Well, good morning, church. So good to be with you all in person, whether you're joining us in person or joining us online. We're thankful for your presence. We want you to know what an important part of our family, important part of our congregation you are. I tell you what, it has been an exciting week. Jonathan Tucker.
The one I love.
And we got to go to this conference in Little Rock. And I know that's, I'm not trying to make you jealous. Everybody wants to go to, of course, Little Rock in the winter, but it is pretty scenic. Now we went and it was absolutely fantastic. We got to spend some time with some good friends of ours, and I'm excited for the future of our congregation kind of coming out of that. I'm looking forward to sharing some of that with you. But in the meantime, there's been so much going on right here. Some of you, who's seen the Good News magazine this week? Raise your hand. If you haven't, it is, we've got a whole story and layout about our ramp building ministry. Joel and the men's ministry have made the paper. I mean, it's a big deal. It is a really great ministry. I love the picture of all the guys here, and Joel, of course, said, and I won't do it unless I get a full page to myself. And so you'll see a great big picture of Joel in there as well. So I think that's a great ministry, a great service we do in the community to build ramps for folks who have difficulty getting in and out of their homes. And those things are costly, and a lot of times people who are struggling financially and with health problems just aren't able to either do it themselves or afford to have it done. So this is a great ministry. And then yesterday, Joel sent me these pictures of the Upward devotionals where Jonathan was tying up children at halftime. And it's another great ministry. Upward is a great ministry. It serves a lot of the families in our own congregation. It also serves some from our community. It helps us build relationships with folks we might not otherwise come to know. And I just think it's great. We have all of these great ministries going on in the congregation and more. There are great ministries that serve the poor of our community, helping them with their bills. And there are ministries that serve the women of our congregation where they serve one another and also do some service for others. There's ministries to serve the kids and the teenagers. And there's a lot of great ministry opportunities. And when things are going well with whatever ministry you're involved with, whatever it is you like to, it is great. It's an exciting time. And we can really get caught up in the excitement of ministry and think, this is what it's all about. You know, here we are doing it. We are making some progress. And if we have enough success, we may be even tempted to focus on our particular area of ministry so much that we forget the bigger questions, the essential questions that we're supposed to be focusing on. Sometimes we have to stop and remind ourselves exactly what we're aiming for in this ministry that we're involved in. We have to stop and check in with our boss, check in with God, sort of get our bearings again. And that's what we're going to be looking at today in this story about Jesus. So we need to think a little bit about this context, this passage, as we continue our study through Mark. Mark begins his gospel, which we talked about in the last few weeks, with these stories about Jesus' identity, about his power, about his authority, and how he makes that very evident. Now, he calls the disciples, and they drop whatever they're doing. They just, like, come follow, because Jesus has so much authority, and he commands this man that's possessed with a demon, and the demon immediately obeys because Jesus has such authority, and he teaches the people. And the way he teaches the people, they're all scratching their heads, saying, this guy doesn't teach like anybody else with so much power, so much authority. All of that's going on, and it seems like a big show. But at the same time, there's this puzzle of the disciples' inability to understand who it is they're dealing with. They don't understand who Jesus is. So after Jesus cast out that demon from the man at the synagogue, which would have turned everybody's head, would have put a lot of eyeballs on Jesus, drawn a lot of attention. Jesus is demonstrating this power, demonstrating this authority, but on the heels of that, they go to Simon Peter's house. And at Simon Peter's house, Simon's mother-in-law is ill. She's got, whether it's a fever or what exactly it is, or long-term illness, or she just feels that bad that day. It's not made perfectly clear, only that she was sick, and Jesus heals her, and she starts feeling better and starts serving the people in her house. So no doubt more people are now talking about Jesus because he keeps doing more and more. And on the heels of that, Mark tells us this. It says, that evening, after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many people who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he would not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. So after sunset, so this is Sabbath day. And you may remember that Sabbath laws prohibited certain activities. You weren't supposed to work on the Sabbath. And that limited even how far you could walk, among other things. There's a lot of activities you couldn't do. You're supposed to be spent that day focusing on the Lord and his law and his goodness in your life, and which was a great thing, but it had become, by the time Jesus came along, a very regulated life. And so these people, they can't bring the sick and infirm to Jesus because you can't carry sick folks around. If you've never tried to carry someone around, you know it is work. It's hard work. And so they didn't bring Jesus to sick and infirm before sundown, because before sundown, it was still Sabbath. They couldn't do that. If you lived across town or a little too far away, you couldn't even walk over there yourself because you couldn't do work with the Sabbath. So it's almost like now that Sabbath has ended, now that the religious part of the day has ended, the real work of the kingdom can get started. That's sort of the way it feels in Mark's gospel. So here they are, and tons of people. Mark says the whole town, the whole city, was gathered around this doorway. This is a huge crowd, lots and lots of people coming to be healed by Jesus. And we're told that they were healed. Jesus healed them of various diseases, and many demons were driven out. But Jesus prevents the demons from saying who he is, right? He doesn't want that word getting out. This is a running theme you'll notice as we go through Mark's gospel. It's known in a lot of circles as the messianic secret. You may have never heard this particular phrase, but it's okay if you don't know the phrase. All it means is that when Jesus heals someone or he does something, he tries to keep it quiet. Like he heals someone and he tells them, don't go spreading this around. Or when he's casting out demons, he tells demons, look, don't say anything about this. Don't say who I am. It's almost like he's trying to keep his identity a secret until later, for a later time. So this running theme of Jesus telling everybody to be quiet about the miracle or the healing or whatever it might be, it's called the messianic secret. And in fact, we see the same thing happening in the very next healing story at the end of Mark chapter 1. It said a man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, said, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus was indignant. And if you've got your Bibles out and you're following along right here, you may have a few different translations right there. We're going to talk about that at the end. But this translation, this is the NIV, it says Jesus was indignant, and he reached out and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him, and he was cleansed. And Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. This was the strong warning. He said, see that you don't tell this to anyone, right? Messianic secret, don't tell anyone, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. In other words, I don't want you going around blabbing about this, but I want you to be restored to your community. In order for this man with leprosy to even come back in to his community, into his neighborhood, into his home, with his family, he can't do that until he is sort of certified clean. And to be certified, what do? You go to the temple, the priests look you over, and they make you, look, let's look, take off your robe, We're going to check you all out and make sure there is no signs of leprosy. And if there are no signs of leprosy and you are cleansed, you make a sacrifice and boom, you are back in town. You can have a job now. You can move back in with your wife or your husband or your kids or your parents or whoever it is that's your family. You get to move back into your old house, sleep in your old bed, have your old friends, gather for Sabbath in either the temple or the synagogue. You are restored to community. So in this man's mind, he comes to Jesus just knowing Jesus can heal him. It is settled in his mind. The only question is, will Jesus heal him? Now, this is a really important moment. If you know anything about the situation of people with leprosy in Jesus' day, you're going to realize that this guy is taking a huge risk. He is risking everything to be right here. He's got everything to lose. A leper, because they couldn't have a regular job or doing that, they're entirely dependent on charity. Does that make sense? The charity. Sometimes if they have a family that's wealthy enough, just the family can take care of them. If you've got a brother or a parent or our kids who make a good living, they can provide you with food and provide you enough to get by. But if you don't have that, you've got to depend on kind of the community at large. You need other people to help take care of you. So by this leper coming in here, if he makes a nuisance of himself and everybody gets mad at him, he could starve to death. His experience up to this point would have been of utter rejection by every able-bodied person he'd ever encountered. In fact, it's pretty amazing that he gets this close to Jesus without being shooed off. But he does. And to everyone's surprise, Jesus not only agrees to heal him, but he does this by reaching out and touching the leper, putting his hands on the leper. And touch is just one of those core means of human connection. If you're feeling bad, or you're feeling sad, or you're feeling angry, or you're feeling hurt, if you are in your feelings, and someone just holds your hand or puts an arm around you, it makes a world of difference, doesn't it? It doesn't change the situation that caused you to feel that way, but it changes how you feel in that situation. And Jesus knows that. We are made for human contact. And when we're deprived of it, we kind of have this hole, this craving. So Jesus knows that. Jesus knows this guy would have been shunned by everybody he came in contact with. So the first thing Jesus does before he even heals him, he reaches out and touches him. It's a sign that not only is Jesus willing to heal him, but this healing is real. Because if this was just a show, if Jesus were just a con artist, and maybe you're thinking the same thing I am, like one of those people who throws up a roadside tent in an effort to perform Jesus stuff in order to get money. You know what I'm talking about? If this guy were just performing like a street magician in order to scam people, he wouldn't have touched the leper. I mean, that's a bridge too far. You just wouldn't do that. You'd be like, all right, buddy, you stay back there. You are healed. Head on back. Give him a big clap, everybody. Thanks for coming out. Jesus doesn't do that. He needs everybody to know that this healing is real. So he puts his hand on the man. Because you wouldn't risk that if the healing weren't real. But Jesus does. There's nothing for Jesus to fear in touching this guy. The leprosy has completely left him. But I want to jump back to that little tidbit we talked about just a little bit earlier. Some translations will say that Jesus looked at this man with leprosy and he had pity. I don't know what translation you're using, but a lot of them will say Jesus looked on him with pity. And sometimes you'll have a little asterisk and say other translations or other ancient texts we found have a different word, that Jesus was angry. And for a long time, we just thought it was pity, because the best text we had access to, the oldest text we had access to, all said pity. Then we started finding older texts of Mark, and they say Jesus was angry. Up until the 15th century, by the way, everything was hand copied. Every book, every word was written down by somebody. And sometimes, because they're human, what these generally priests and scholars would do is they'd come across a word and they're like, I don't think that's right. I don't think Jesus would be angry here. Maybe somebody did it wrong before me. So I'm going to change it from Jesus was angry to Jesus felt pity. That makes more sense here. They're not trying to change the Bible, by the way. They're just thinking somebody before them has messed it up or that it was given to them wrong. So they, copying by hand, would start changing anger to pity. And just like that, most of our modern translations ended up with pity. But the older texts that we've now found all say Jesus was angry. Why do you think Jesus would be angry here? It doesn't make sense. Would Jesus be angry that they let the leper through? That would be something that people could legitimately be angry about. But it doesn't seem to be what Jesus is angry about. Is Jesus angry that this guy deigned to speak to him? Again, something people would have been legitimately angry about. But doesn't seem to be what Jesus is angry about. So why would Jesus be angry? And based on what we are learning about the character of Jesus and what we see in this story, it seems like Jesus is angry about what sin and brokenness does in your life, in my life, and in the life of this man with leprosy. Because this guy, not only did he have the real human problem of sin, the one we all have, but he gets to see that effect played out in this awful, awful disease that has cut this man off from his community, has isolated him. By law, by the way, this is not just that people were being mean. They would have been mean, but it's not just that. By law, he was cut off from the community. And so he's been victimized. For however long, he has been victimized and isolated, which is what we generally do with people who do not fit our standards of hygiene or of health, normalcy. Has anybody ever heard of the ugly laws? You know what the ugly laws are? This is weird. I didn't know about this. But apparently, not too long ago, there were these laws in several U.S. states that would forbid people with physical disfigurement or abnormalcy in some way, they couldn't be in public spaces. And when I say fairly recently, they were on the books until the 70s, which doesn't feel that long ago to me. It might feel a long way ago to you, depending on your age. But that's relatively recent in history, at least. Until the 70s. If you had some physical disformity, you couldn't be in public. So maybe that attitude was sort of what made Jesus angry when he saw the plight of this man. In any case, Jesus heals this man, and then he warns them sternly, don't go around talking about this. Keep it to yourself. And because Jesus is not healing this guy, I think we often get confused about the purpose of the healings. And we think about, what would I be doing the healings for? The healings are for attention. If I heal people, I'll get attention. People will pay attention to me. People will listen to me. But that's not what Jesus is doing. Jesus doesn't need a PR firm. Jesus doesn't need to get the word out. That's not what he's trying to get across here. So he heals the man and tells him to be quiet about it. The guy goes around immediately, starts blabbing about it. And what we find out is when that happens, Jesus can't even go anywhere, because there's a huge clamor of people following him so that they can be healed too. They're trying to get to him. And from Jesus' vantage point, this is kind of a bad thing. Why is it a bad thing? What's wrong with some well-deserved, well-earned publicity? And to understand why Jesus would tell him not to do that, why he doesn't think all this publicity is just grand, we need to back up just a smidge to the passage we skipped over. In Mark chapter 1, beginning in verse 35, we read this. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up. And he left the house and he went off to a solitary place, right? This is the opposite. Remember where he was just a few hours before? He was in a house and the whole city's at the door. And he's healing people and he's casting out demons and all of this ruckus. Jesus, after he finally gets them sent off and he gets a couple hours of shut eye, he gets up and goes off by himself in the dark where he prayed. Now, Simon and his companions, they went to look for him. And when they found him, you can kind of hear the accusation in this. Everyone's looking for you. Parents, you ever said that to your kids? Where have you been? Everyone's looking for you. Jesus replied, let's go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That's why I've come. The disciples, no doubt, look at Jesus and they think to themselves, look, Jesus can do anything. And he can. Jesus can do anything. Nothing can stop him. Look what has happened in the last 24 hours. Demon possession and sickness and drawing huge crowds. Jesus is at the heart of all this enormous goings on. Jesus is on a roll and we need to keep rolling, buddy. We need to get the word out. And so we need to keep this Jesus train moving. And then they can't find him. So in exasperation or in impatience, they say, everyone's looking for you. They could have, the subtext here is, think of all the opportunities you are missing by not being where you're supposed to be. You could be back there. There's lots more healings to do, Jesus. Lots more demons to be cast out. Lots more good you could be doing it. And instead, you're out here by yourself. But what they didn't realize, and what good-hearted, well-intentioned followers of Jesus today, what we often fail to realize is that Jesus did not come to perform miracles. He didn't. Jesus did not come just to do good deeds. Jesus came to preach the good news of the kingdom of God. Said, that's why I came. This is why I came. Look, I'm going to confess to you this morning that this is one of the easiest and most natural mistakes that followers of Jesus can make. It totally makes sense to me that we can get so caught up in doing good that we miss the mission. We can serve, we can help, we can go on all these trips, we can do it in our own hometown, we can rebuild people from fires, and we can do all these good things. And by the way, those are, without question, good things. Everybody agrees those are good things. We can do all these amazing things, but if we're not preaching the gospel, we're missing out on the mission. We can do all the great things, but if we're not preaching the gospel, we're missing out on the mission. And when we're so caught up in doing the next good thing and the next good thing, we may well discover Jesus is not where he's supposed to be because Jesus is busy at mission. And we're still busy back doing the good stuff. We're doing stuff Jesus is no longer a part of. Jesus is trying to save souls, and we're still stuck on good deeds. Make sure I'm perfectly clear here. There's nothing wrong with good deeds. I think they are a vital and important part of the ministry of this church. The mission of this church is to do good things like the Ramp Ministry, like Upward. I think that is a part of our core identity. But if we do those things without coupling it with preaching the gospel, not just me preaching the gospel, but without you preaching the gospel, then we're missing out on the mission of Jesus. You were chosen. Jesus chose you. Called you, just like he called Peter and Andrew and James and John. Jesus chose and called you, not just so you could see him do miracles. Jesus chose and called you as a disciple so that you in turn would make disciples. And if we're not doing that, we're not on the mission of Jesus. If you're not talking to the folks you meet about Jesus, you're missing out on the mission of Jesus. And I'm with you. I am so scared of coming across like a bad used car salesman that I'm super nervous about bringing up Jesus. because I don't want folks to think that I don't see the real them, that I don't think they're worthy of a regular conversation. I don't want them to think I'm trying to, you know, sell them my uncle's used 74 Pinto, right? And it can come across that way. Sometimes evangelism is super cheesy. So I am very nervous about it and very apprehensive about it. And I will sometimes go months or even years before I get into a legitimate Jesus conversation with someone I know. And that's something I got to repent of. I have to be better at making disciples. We have to be better at making disciples. I will bet you know at least one person that needs Jesus desperately. And maybe you've been doing good stuff for them. Maybe you've been helping them with bills or just being a friend to listen. Maybe you watch their kids or do chores with them. I don't know, but you're doing good stuff for them. And praise God for that. Thank you for that. But you also got to talk to them about Jesus. This morning, it is my pledge to you, and we're going to be getting into this as we go through Mark's gospel, that we will be a church that makes disciples. We may never be the big fancy church. We might one day. I kind of doubt it. Forest Mill just kind of doesn't lend itself to big fanciness. But what I think we can be really good at is loving on folks and showing them Jesus. You've already shown a heart for it. Now we've got to get equipped to do that. So my prayer for you, my prayer for us as a congregation, is that we will follow Jesus in his mission of reaching and saving the lost. And if we can pray for you, encourage you, lift you up this morning, we want you to know we love you, we care about you, and we want to support you in that mission. Won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?